Okay, my name is Professor James Larkin. I'm the Director of the Radiation and Health Physics Unit at Fitz University. I'm the project leader and CEO of the Rhizotope project. We've done it for two reasons. The first reason is that we wanted to devalue the rhino horn in the eyes of the end users, get it so much so people don't want to own rhino horn, they don't want to use rhino horn in their traditional medicine, they don't want to be giving carved rhino horn to friends and colleagues because they're trying to get influence with those people, because research shows people radically overestimate the dose at any particular the effect of any dose that they might receive. And so we're just trying to scare people away from owning rhino horn. Excuse me. And the second reason we're doing it is, and it's the secondary reason, it's the second bite of the cherry, is that by making the horn slightly radioactive, it means it improves the chances of us being able to detect those horns as it's moved across international boundaries. What you get to realize is, for many years now, there has this global effort to install radiation detection monitoring systems to prevent nuclear terrorism. And we are using those same systems to help us prevent illicit wildlife trafficking. And this is something that sparked the imagination of some people at the International Atomic Energy Agency who've put up the funding to help us do this research. So we have those two reasons. One is to make people not want the horn, and two, if the smugglers and the poachers take the horn, it becomes much easier to detect those horns through a global system. So, lots of international hub airports and things like that have these sophisticated detection systems which can pick up minute quantities of radioactivity. And so we thought, well, let's use that to help prevent illicit wildlife trafficking, particularly a rhino horn.
That is amazing. So now I see you started your project off, I think, was it in Limpopo?
It's in Limpopo, yes.
We did 20 rhinos so far.
We've done 20 animals there, and now we will follow those animals very carefully for the next 6 months. There's a great team of ladies there who look after these animals on a daily basis, and they will check up on the animals and make sure that if there's any issues or anything like that. They're a dedicated team. They're a fantastic group of ladies who are dedicated to the well-being of these rhinos. And it's only because I've been extraordinarily fortunate to meet these people and have them sort of partner with us that we've been able to come this far.
So after the six-month period is done, is this project going to come to KZN where there has been a large recorded amount?
I'm dreaming of it, to be honest with you. As soon as it's done, if we are asked to go and help the owners of Rhino in KZN, we'll be loading up the wagons and driving down there as quickly as possible.
I mean, it would make sense.
It would make sense. Obviously, I've got to be very careful that nothing does happen between now and then. I'm firmly of the belief that it won't. But we've got to take this step by step, because these animals are incredibly valuable, if not in financial terms, but in what they represent for the people of South Africa is we're the custodians of these animals, and you've got to look after them, because who wants to tell their children, their grandchildren, oops, it was on our generation that we let these things go extinct, and the only place you can see a rhino now is a zoo in America or in a picture book. So, I feel responsible, and, to be honest with you, I sometimes feel upset when I see them having to dehorn rhino, because That's the last resort, if you ask me. And so hopefully, rather than dehorn, we can put isotopes into these animals, make sure they keep their horns, and hopefully scare the poachers away so they go and do something else, go and smuggle tobacco or something like that.
I mean,